Put your phone down. Come on. You can do it. All right, I know it's difficult because the truth is these pocket supercomputers are very hard to put away, and there are biological reasons for that. But say you wanted to free yourself from your phone a bit and not check it 47 times a day and actually do other things. Well, science journalist Catherine Price says it's possible. She's author of the new book, How to Break Up with Your Phone, and she joins us now. Catherine, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you very much for having me.
So breaking up is always really hard to do.
As the song goes.
Why does it feel so hard to break up with your phone?
I mean, well, let's clarify first what we mean by breakup so that listeners don't just shut off their radios when they hear that word. Breaking up with your phone is not about throwing your phone out a window. It's about taking a step back and figuring out what a healthier relationship would look like and then making a plan for how to create that relationship.
Okay.
So don't freak out.
So it's not like we can't see each other anymore. Maybe it's like we need some healthy time apart, reassess, and then move on from there. Point taken.
It's like couples therapy.
Yeah. Okay. So when did you first realize that maybe you needed to reevaluate your relationship with your phone?
I would say it was about 2.5 years ago. I'd recently had a baby, and you know this was an ongoing process, but the crystallizing moment came when I was sitting one night with her in the dark, late at night, exhausted. And I had this kind of out-of-body moment, maybe because I was so sleep-deprived. And I saw the scene as it would look from the outside, which was her looking up at me with her little newborn eyes that were developed just enough to focus on my face. And I was looking down at my phone, searching on eBay for antique door hardware, which is this peculiar passion of mine. But anyway, I thought to myself, wow, I don't want this to be my daughter's first impression of a human relationship, let alone her first impression of a relationship with her mother.
Yeah. Well, but to cut you some slack, I mean, I've been where you are those late, impossibly late nights with very, very young children. And sometimes a break from the grind of that is what you need. And the phone does provide it. So
definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I don't mean to be judgy about that. For me, it was just a moment of like, you know, like, how often have I been doing this, though?
Yeah. Well, so that's the thing, right? So much of our interactions or how much we use smartphones today, we just don't even realize it, right? Then that's part of the challenge.
I think that's exactly the point, right? The biggest point I can make is that we just haven't thought about our relationships. But just by thinking about it or just having a, that's interesting moment, you've already started to change, because I just don't think we've really even begun to think about this issue until very recently.
Yeah. So, I mean, would you say, I mean, you're a science journalist, so you bring that eye and that analysis to your book here. And would you say that we have a lot of people who have unhealthy relationships with the technology, the super technology in their pockets and purses?
Yes, I would. There's a time tracking app called Moment that you can use to track the time you spend on your device. And it has about almost 5 million users at this point. And I contacted the guy who made that, and he told me that the average user spends 3 hours and 57 minutes per day on their phone, so nearly 4 hours a day, which is basically a quarter of our waking lives. And that is not counting time we spend on phone calls or listening to music or times when the screen's off. That is just time when the screen is on. So to me, anything you're spending 4 hours a day doing is something you probably want to look at a little bit more closely to make sure you actually want to be doing it.
Yeah. You know, I personally am very sympathetic to what you just said. But on the other hand, like a while ago, last year, I had a fantastic conversation with Sherry Turkle. She's at MIT. People have probably seen her TED Talks about sort of the isolating effects of intense uses of screens. She's been writing about how we should sort of teach ourselves again how to have good conversations. And I told her, I said, you know, one wonders if this is the reaction that we have to almost any new, utterly transformative technology, right? Like when the printing press came along and there were a lot more books, were people saying, oh, no, we're spending too much time reading books and not enough time, you know, in the public square or listening to stories being told by our elders? I just wonder, like, how much are we at risk of overreacting in terms of what our relationship with this new technology is?
Well, we certainly have a long history of overreacting or, you know, in retrospect, overreacting to technologies. My favorite example of that is the kaleidoscope. There was this time in Victorian England where everyone was actually freaked out about kaleidoscopes because they were so mesmerizing that people actually were walking around the streets looking into kaleidoscopes much in the same way that we look into phones. So there is that. But I actually believe that phones are different. And it is just not, it's not just me who believes this. There's a guy named Tristan Harris who started a movement called Time Well Spent. He's a former designer at Google and does a lot with ethics of design. And he points out that phones really are different in that, I mean, not only do you have them on you at all times and they have access to the entire internet and more, but you actually have people on the other side of your phone actively trying to get you to spend more time on it.
Yeah. Phones are different. Smartphones in particular are different. I mean, you have chapters about this. Give us a little bit more about what you've written about. Like, there's a whole chapter you have about your phone is changing your brain. So how is it changing our brains?
So, for example, Nicholas Carr, the author of a book called The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brain, points out that the internet is actually perfectly designed to change our brains. If you then think about how the phone is not just the internet in your pocket, but has all these other things in it designed to keep us on them, I think it becomes even more convincing of an argument to say that we are changing our brains.
Right. You were saying that also the way the phone is designed and the apps that are on the phone are designed, are consciously designed to sort of harness things that go on in our brain that make it hard for us to put them down. Essentially, you know, all the dopamine squirts, things like that, that make it virtually addictive.
Right. So dopamine, that's also a word that comes up a lot when we talk about this. It's a brain chemical that is basically a salience indicator, meaning that when you encounter something that your brain determines that you should pay attention to or remember, it releases dopamine. I mean, among other neurotransmitters, but that's a key one. And then if you think about your phones, every time you check your phone, you're going to see something that is in some way arousing, you know, emotionally. And when that happens, you keep checking in anticipation, and eventually you become like Pavlov's dogs, where you anticipate a reward, so you start to crave your phone. Right? So you get into these cycles. Phones are very much designed to take advantage of this part of our brain chemistry. In terms of how are our phones designed to keep us coming back for more, there are a lot of features, if you start paying attention to the phones, that really stand out, particularly social media apps. And my favorite example is the fact that the feeds are endless. That's deliberate. And why would that be deliberate? Because we're actually not the customers for social media apps. We're the product that's being sold. They're advertising companies and data collection companies. And the more data we give them and the more time and attention we give them, the more money they make.
So for people who maybe want to reassess or change their relationships with their smartphones, I mean, what's the first most important thing you recommend they do?
The most important thing I think you should start with when you're trying to assess your relationship is to think about a bigger philosophical point, which is that your life is what you pay attention to. You're only going to experience and remember what you pay attention to. And so when you're making a decision in the moment about what to spend your attention on, you're making a much broader decision about how you want to spend your life in general.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important to remember that we're not saying phones are bad. Phones aren't bad or good. They're phones. They're very useful tools. They've got all sorts of things that are fun to use and that really do bring us closer together with people. So that's not the point. The point is to ask what we want our relationships to be with them. And I also think it's useful to frame it a little bit differently. We tend to think of, oh, God, I want to spend less time on my phone, which feels restrictive. What we really should be saying is, I want to spend more time on my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then asking yourself what that means to you and then making changes to live up to that.
Well, so most of the book then is this guide, this step-by-step plan for how to reevaluate your relationship with your phone. You did it in a 30-day plan format. Why'd you do that?
Basically for several reasons. One is that it takes time to change a habit, and so you're not going to just be able to change your habits in a day. I mean, number two, kind of related to that, is that most things I've seen written about this issue conclude with a list of like tips and tricks, like turn your phone to grayscale or rearrange your apps or don't charge your phone in your bedroom. And all of those are very useful. Definitely, I would recommend them. But if you don't do that in a broader context of a bigger goal, then I think you're just going to turn your phone right back to color as soon as you want to take a picture, which is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
So the 30-day plan is meant to give people a time to actually change behavior. And the other reason is that, going back to the point about our phones, of training our brains to be more distractible, kind of pushing them back toward their default state of distraction, if you actually do want to start building your, I call it muscle of attention back up, your capacity to focus, you need to take the time to actually incorporate an attention building practice into your life and then stick with it for a while in order to see effects. So those are some of the reasons that it's not just a, you know, one day tip and trick kind of thing.
Yeah. And so tell us, what are a couple of things early on in the plan that you recommend people do?
One thing is to get a sense of how much time you're actually spending on your phone. I call that kind of your triage. And that's when I recommend using a tracking app such as Moment, or there's one called Quality Time for Android. And that'll just measure, you know, how much those little pickups are actually adding up to and how many pickups a day you have, and then which apps you're spending the most time on. And then the next step is actually to begin to catch yourself in the act of checking your phone. Because as we were talking about at the beginning, part of the issue here is we're just not really aware of our own behaviors. We haven't thought about them, and we don't even, you know, you often pick up your phone and don't know how it got there. I call that a zombie check. You're like, oh my God, I have no idea even what I was checking to begin with. So in order to begin to check yourself and catch yourself in those moments, I recommend that you create what I call a speed bump for yourself, some little obstacle that makes you stop and have to decide whether or not to continue. So, for example, you could put a rubber band or a hair tie around your phone. Or I actually created lock screen images people can download. It's phonebreakup.com is the book's website. And those are free pictures you can put as your lock screen that say things like, do you really want to pick me up right now? And what for, why now, what else, which is another suggestion.
What and the else, idea really, yeah.
What else? And really the idea is to just give you that stopping cue, that momentary pause where you're jolted out of autopilot and you have to decide whether you want to continue. And if you do, it's totally fine. I think that's another key point, is that there's no judgment here. I mean, it's your time and your attention. You decide how you want to spend it. But too often we do that without thinking.
Catherine Price's new book is How to Break Up with Your Phone. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you, Catherine. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.